97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, let's go to my man from the Philadelphia Inquirer on the Comcast Business Hotline. As promised, beyond fast, he's the great Marcus Hayes. How are you, Marcus?
Man, how in the world do you rate DeSean Jackson anything but a complete catastrophe?
Well, he played one game. He was an incomplete.
No, not an incomplete. This is one. He signed a two-year contract. He played one game in the first year of the contract.
All
That's
right.
Catastrophic.
That's fine. I'll give you that. That's fine. I'm just saying
this
that
he's the worst signing he's ever made.
But he didn't play poorly. He got hurt. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
But he only played like 13 games a year before that. You knew he was it was a huge risk. It was a huge gamble, and it was catastrophic to the entire season.
Doug Peterson only thought he was going to play 12. He said that off the record. He said, I think he's going to play 12.
Well, he didn't say it on the record. He didn't say it to me.
No, it's unbelievable. So I'll give you that. That's fine.
I mean, but that's my point. It's the worst signing of his career, DeSean Jackson.
Howie Roseman's worst signing? Because he's had some bad signings.
By far.
Really?
By far the worst signing of his career.
What if he has a good
year
this year?
The only caveat to DeSean Jackson, it wasn't the character stuff, it was the injury stuff.
Yeah. But what if he has
he got hurt.
If he has a good year this year, you can't call it the worst signing in history.
Well, why not?
It turned out poorly last year. It turned out poorly.
No. What you rate signings on the value for your dollar. There is no way they can recoup that value for that dollar.
Okay.
None.
I'll give you that. It turned out poorly. A lot of the moves turned out poorly. The drafting has been poor. What do you think of what they've done so far, and are they better on paper now, or were they better on paper a few days ago?
I'm fascinated to see how Darius Slay does in this environment without Malcolm Jenkins. This is a leaderless team now. You've taken the offensive leader, Jason Peters, and you let him go ostensibly. We don't expect him to be back. And if he does come back, he's going to be diminished. Because you can't tell the team, we don't need this guy, and then have him come back. Right. So even if he does come back, he comes back with a different profile. And you took the undisputed leader of the team, Malcolm Jenkins, and told him he wasn't worth whatever he wanted, $10 million a year, $12 million a year.
What could they have done to have kept him? Because he got $8 million a year in New Orleans for 4 years and a $9 million signing bonus. It didn't seem like it was that far away that the Eagles could have reached that.
I'm pretty sure he got $16 million guaranteed.
Yes, it is, it is $16 million guaranteed.
Yeah, so that's essentially 2 years at $8 million, or, you know, you believe that he will make, you know, probably $20, $21 million in the first couple of years. I'm not sure. And it's incentive-laden, too. So if New Orleans does well, which they should, then he should probably make more than $8 million a year. The Eagles just weren't interested. They weren't interested in having him pass this season. I don't disagree with that necessarily. His pass coverage skills the last three seasons in a row have diminished. He was no longer a real option for coverage in really any of their packages because he didn't make plays. I mean, he made tackles once the guy caught the ball, but he didn't make plays. And he didn't make a whole lot of – he wasn't that great to begin with. I mean, he was okay. He was serviceable. He was a safety playing, you know, a cornerback spot. Which brings a lot of value, but you can't really count on it, and you could match up against him and put him at a disadvantage. All that said, I don't necessarily disagree with them not extending him at the numbers, you know, we thought he wanted, but his value to the locker room was just, I mean, he led
invaluable.
He led every aspect of the team. He was the player rep.
Yep.
They got to get a new player rep. He was the emissary to both Schwartz and Peterson for the entire locker room, for the entire franchise. I mean, you know, his social justice stuff never interfered with his performance in the locker room or on the team. I mean, think about what a big hero he was when he went after Orlando Scandrick, who was, by the way, a much better signing than DeSean Jackson. Think about how valuable he was to the proletariat when he told Orlando Scandrick to, you know, shut his mouth or stuff it or whatever.
How much do you think that will hurt this team that he's no longer here? Not from an on-the-field standpoint, but like you said, from in the locker room standpoint.
It depends on who steps up. I mean, Rodney McLeod is not a bad guy to lead a team. He's got some baggage, too. He shied away from contact twice in his first season in 2016. But, you know, so did Zach Ertz, and he's been able to reclaim himself. But he's much more talented than Rodney McLeod. I mean, if I'm Fletcher Cox, I have a hard time taking Rodney McLeod seriously. Fletcher Cox, I don't think, is the kind of guy who can represent a team the way that Malcolm Jenkins did, the way that Troy Vincent did, the way that Brian Dawkins did. He's the best player, but I don't know that you can't. The answer is I don't know that there's a person on the team who can replace that element of Malcolm Jenkins offensively or defensively. You know, I mean, you're looking at Lane Johnson on the offensive side of the ball because Jason Kelce, how long is he going to be here? And I don't know how committed he is to being the, I don't know, politically correct leader of a team, saying the right things at the right time. And the thing about Malcolm was, and this is kind of an interesting tangent. The thing about Malcolm was when Chip Kelly left town, Malcolm Jenkins didn't like Chip Kelly, but Malcolm Jenkins did not address Chip Kelly leaving town the way that Lane Johnson did, the way that other significant players did,
right,
with more to lose than Malcolm Jenkins. Malcolm Jenkins was a coward in that moment. When Malcolm Jenkins, I think it was a preseason game in Chicago, when he began to protest alongside Colin Kaepernick during the national anthem,
right,
he changed his entire profile. He was there every day he could be there. He was there that night. I actually told Les Bowen when we were working at the Daily News before the two newsrooms merged, I said, you know what, I'll do Malcolm, but you know, that's just because I know he's not going to talk and I can be a doer of a column. It doesn't need to be a news story. I'll take it off you. Malcolm Jenkins talked for 20 minutes and he knew what he wanted to say. So since that day, I know that was about, but he talked about everything. He would talk about everything all the time and eloquently. And you didn't always agree with him and he wasn't always pleasant, but he talked about the day Eric Reed accosted him during the coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about that at great length. He was probably his least composed at that moment because he felt betrayed.
Right.
And, you know, you don't get called an Uncle Tom and take it lightly, especially
right, sure,
when you're wearing, you know, African, you know, the tricolor hat, or I can't remember what it's called, but, you know, I understand him being upset in that moment, but he was still very composed. So all that said, I mean, it's really not fair to compare, to answer your question, you know, 4 minutes later, it's not fair to compare probably the most comprehensive leader the Eagles have ever had to anyone else, you know? So, and he's a guy who, also, to further answer your question, he's a guy who grew into it, who matured into it, you know, as he was maturing into it as a player rep, as a dad, as a husband, as a businessman, all those sorts of things. It was really, really, really interesting to see him sort of emerge and, I think, to find himself as a person amid all of that. It was really interesting. I mean, think about it. He's had two GMs here, one guy,
yeah,
you know, one guy switched to the other guy, switched to the other guy. You know, he went through the Joe Douglas years. He, you know, he's had two defensive coordinators, and both of them are kind of crazy. And, you know, two really eccentric head coaches, won a Super Bowl. I mean, what Malcolm Jenkins went through here is like a career's worth of stuff for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah, he's Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline from the Philadelphia Inquirer. So they didn't get Byron Jones. They got Darius Slay. Now he's the highest paid corner in the league. They moved Jalen Mills. Apparently they're moving him to safety. One, who plays on the other side of Darius Slay? And did you like the move in acquiring Darius Slay for those two picks?
I don't know. You're going to overpay somebody. And Darius Slay is a better cornerback than Byron Jones. And their contracts expire at the same age, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Darius Slay is 3 years older, 2 years older than Byron Jones?
He's 29. But,
yeah, so the contracts both expire when they're 32, which is kind of the shelf life for, you know, a lockdown corner. Maybe he can play safety in the future. But I haven't really liked or disliked anything they did. I don't think they're a better team now than they were going into free agency, but I don't think they're any worse. But so much depends on, and nobody wants to hear this, them winning the bets that they've made on their own guys. I mean, it just does. Their players have to produce. I mean, I don't know. When you look at how they've built, right? They're counting on lots of, take Avante Maddox, for example.
Yeah.
Who might be the guy that plays opposite Darius Slay, right?
Sure.
He's a fourth round pick in 2018. He's played in 25 games and he started 15 of them. He's been impressive at times. But in your third season, you can't draft a guy in the fourth round and never get production out of him.
Right.
You just can't cut bait. So he's an example. I mean, it sounds as though they've soured on Rasul Douglas. I've heard they're trying to trade him. I don't know anybody who would take him. I hope nobody does take him because I think he's your third safety. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Jim Schwartz doesn't agree with me. Tim Houck, the safeties coach, doesn't agree with me. Everybody else in the NFL I talk to agrees with me. He can't run back. He can't run in pursuit of a receiver, but he can cover, and he's a playmaker. He has good hands. So to answer your question, a lot of what they will be, and I don't think this is necessarily wrong, I don't think this is a bad idea, a lot of what they will be depends on the maturation of who they have. I mean, Derek Barnett was atrocious. He was one of the five worst starting defensive ends in the league last year.
Yep.
And one of the five, and his year last year was one of the five worst in the last 2 years. And he was suspended. So he was awful. What if he takes a step forward? You know, what if Malik Jackson moves out to the end for, you know, 10-15% of his plays and gets three sacks out there? You know, there are a lot of moving parts here. There are a lot of, this is a very difficult team to project. Number one, because they're not done. And number two, because you just can't. You can't project what young guys are going to do or what they're not going to do. And one thing about this organization the last couple of years is they've been pretty good at identifying talent that isn't like top-tier talent, serviceable talent. You know, they haven't been great at sort of, you know, with Dallas Goedert was probably the exception. The young, you know, kind of stud guys haven't been great immediately. But they've been pretty good at getting value from guys like Avante Maddox. So that's kind of the answer. Are they better? You know what to expect. It depends on where these guys go. Well, do not, however, bet on DeSean Jackson.
Okay, we're running out of time a little bit, Marcus. I got one more question for you because I think it's an important position that they haven't necessarily addressed unless you consider them signing Nate Sudfeld to a one-year, $2 million deal. The deal, they can't be going into the season with Nate Sudfeld as their backup. Can they, or do they have to go out and find another veteran, maybe a Joe Flacco?
I thought that their biggest mistake last season was making Josh McCown their number two quarterback. I like Nate Sudfeld. I think he's a talented guy. He's familiar with the offense. He's familiar with his teammates. His hand, his left hand that he broke last year in the preseason, it wasn't 100% at the end of the season. So maybe that was an issue with the Josh McCown number two role. Maybe they said, okay, Josh McCown at 100% is better than Nate Sudfeld offhand at 85% or 75%. He was still doing hand exercises in January.
Okay.
So that said, I don't have a problem with Nate Sudfeld being their number two whatsoever. They seem to have soured on him after a couple of, you know, sketchy preseason performances. But I like him. I think he's a valuable guy. And I think they probably need to draft a quarterback. They need to draft a third or fourth round quarterback. I think you should always have a guy in his first, second, or third year in your system, and a real guy, not a pretend guy. And I know they tried and they failed, but I think they need to replenish that the way they need to replenish the offensive and defensive lines. You know, the first five rounds of the draft, I think every other year with a quarterback, maybe every third year, but every year with your offensive and defensive lines, you have to take somebody to develop. It's just too important or too hard to come by. So I don't have a huge problem with Nate Sudfeld. I thought he should have been the backup quarterback, the number two quarterback, in the second half of last season, as soon as he was, you know, available to play. And honestly, I think he'd have done a better job than Josh McCown did in the playoff game.
Okay. Well, we'll never know. We'll see what happens this year. Marcus, I appreciate your time. As always, great stuff. And we'll catch up with you soon, pal. Have a great day.
Take care, Joe.
All right. You too, Marcus. Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.